Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is an audio version of the 24th Annual Dice Awards Roundtable Series. To watch the video of this episode, please visit youtube.com/officialAIAS.
Brought to you by the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences. This is the award celebration by game makers for game makers, honoring the games that connect players around the globe. No matter where we come from or what our interests, video games bring us together. We gather here to honor our fellow creators and the very best of interactive entertainment. Welcome to the 24th Annual DICE Awards.
Hi, everyone. I'm Khalif Adams, and I'm here with the nominees for Racing Game of the Year. Welcome to the 24th Annual DICE Awards Developer Discussions, where we will be talking about what makes each of these games special and make the connections to other games in the category. Because for the first time, we have all of the folks in this group hanging out and chilling and hanging out with us together. Let's do some introductions of the folks we have in the room. From Dirt 5, we have Robert Karp. How are you doing, Robert?
I'm very well, thanks. Very excited to be here. Are you good?
I'm well. I'm doing okay. I'm hungry. But besides that, everything else is doing okay. It's not too bad. Give the folks at home a little bit of information about the work you've done in the space.
Sure. I've been in the industry for over 20 years now. I've been lucky enough to work at PlayStation for many years. I worked on loads of great games, super proud of. In my more latter years, I've been working at Codemasters now for 6 years or so. Worked on Onrush, and more recently on Dirt 5, which was out in November, available on Next Gen as a launch title, which was super exciting. Super proud of the work that the team did to get there.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. And we also have from the F1 2020 team, we have Lee Mather. How are you doing, Lee?
Yeah, I'm really good, thanks. And unlike you, I'm not hungry because over here I've just had dinner.
Man, what is this with these time zones and all this nonsense across the world? What is happening here with all that business? Give the folks at home, Lee, a little bit of information about the work you've done in this space as well.
Yeah, like Rob, I've been doing this for some time. So I got into the games industry when I was 16. I was QA at a little company called Elite Systems. Did like stuff like Joe and Mac Caveman Ninja and Paperboy game conversions to home systems. So I sort of stayed in the industry, worked for a company called Rage, and worked for Swordfish Studios, and then eventually got picked up by Codemasters in 2008, where I've worked on F1 from the very beginning. So I was on F1 2010 all the way up to 2020.
Brilliant, brilliant. I'm so happy to have you here as well. And rounding out our crew, we have from the Mario Kart Live team, we have Nate Bildorf. How are you doing, Nate?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Good. Give the folks at home a little info about the work you've done in this space as well.
I am Senior Vice President of Product Development and Publishing at Nintendo of America. I've worked there for 20 years. Once I landed at Nintendo, never left, and have had the honor of working with a number of teams across pretty much every IP that Nintendo has. And Mario Kart series is one of my very favorites. So very happy to be representing both Nintendo and Velen Studios today.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. I'm super excited because racing is one of my favorite things on the planet. So getting a chance to talk to you all about all the work you do is going to be especially cool. Tell the audience at home, you know, for you in the studio that you represent, you know, what really do you feel makes a great racing game? You know, there's balance, there's realism, there's physics, there's bananas and blue shells. You know, what's the secret sauce to making that all work together? I'm going to start off with you, Lee, on that one.
Well, I think as you've just mentioned, you know, it's such a broad range of different styles of racing game that, you know, something different can work for very different styles of game. You know, I mean, you've got racing games where it's purely about the on-track experience, and that's where the real depth and the enjoyment comes from. And then you get racing games that are more fun, more crazy, you know, crashing, explosions, and then something like F1, where we actually set out to replicate a sport as much as we do the on-track experience. So we go to the extreme lengths of our you know, our career and my team game modes. So yeah, there's such variation that there's something for anybody. And I sometimes think, you know, sometimes you get those sort of sit forward racing games where you're hunched up and you're always, you know, eyes on stalks. And then you get the ones where you can just kick back on the settee, put some tunes on and you know, and race around a beautiful open world, or, you know, as you say, shoot people with red and blue shells. You know, there's a bit of something for everybody. So I don't think you can really pinpoint what makes a great racing game, because there's such a broad spectrum now as to what you can do in them.
Yeah. Nate, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that, because of the game that you have in the world now. It's very, very different in the way that it's mashing up, you know, real world and virtual worlds in that way, in that space. Yeah. You know, when you're thinking about what makes a great racing game, what are you thinking about?
I think about two things, really. Competition, certainly. You know, I mean, you're trying to win the race. Or one of the challenges for Mario Kart Live was the single player experience, you know, when you're racing against the mixed reality elements of AI opponents, but also the chance of you racing against another physical car when you're playing multiplayer. You know, it's a big challenge for the teams to overcome, but certainly something that was driving the user experience. And then the sensation of speed, I think, you know, maybe a no-brainer, but for racing games, you want to feel like you're going fast. That's part of the thing that drives everybody. And it was very strange. My first experience driving the remote control car in Mario Kart Live, I didn't think it was going to feel very fast, because I could look down and see how fast it was going across the floor. But then when you're sitting in the cockpit, all of a sudden it feels a whole lot faster. So it was really interesting during development to see how that translated in the mixed reality setting.
Oh, that's awesome. I haven't had a chance to play yet, so I'm excited to see what that actually feels like.
It's wild.
When I get into that, that's going to be kind of cool. Robert, I'm curious to hear your thoughts as well on this. You know, what do you feel kind of are the, you know, the very special parts that make, you know, racing games great in that way?
I think Lee and Nate have covered it really well. But I think true of all games is, you know, something that's really immersive, something that's got a really solid user experience. And I think usually they're made by teams that have the time and the effort to and the care and the love to iterate and really polish and tune those mechanics so that players really engage with them. You know, like Nate said, sense of speed. You know, for some players, it's realism or shooting blue shells. So I think, you know, it's a wide variety that really, really does it for people.
Yeah, Lee, you kind of dug into a little bit of the, you know, team part of the game that you've built out, which I think is a really fantastic addition to what it is. You know, you kind of started off with this single player skill based racing game, and it's kind of blown into this kind of full team sport where, you know, there are some key factors to how you've kind of bridged that gap and made that kind of a more robust part of the game. What are some of the thoughts around kind of connecting that from that initial part of the game to this kind of more team version of it?
Yeah, so obviously we're quite lucky that the world of Formula One's really glamorous and there's really cool locations. And obviously it gets a really broad audience across the globe. So people get really great access to Formula One and what they see. And, you know, with Drive to Survive now on Netflix, people see all the drama. And we've always tried to build some of the world into it as well. So obviously over the years, we've brought in locations and characters into the game. As you'll remember, in like F1 2019, we'd got, you know, a protagonist and an antagonist. So again, showing a bit of that drama. But also, like, Formula One teams, they're a team, aren't they? And there's so much more to just that driver on track. So that's why with my team, we wanted to give the player the ability to do so much more. And it just adds so much depth to the game. And as I said, you know, it's not just all about the on-track experience. We also do so much more with the world of Formula One, which we're really lucky to have such great access to.
Yeah, it's I've always been curious about the way that, you know, especially for F1 and for Dirt, you know, you're talking to an audience that has an expectation and one that's kind of more towards the, like, how real can we make this game, and kind of leaning into kind of the sim space in that bigger way. You know, what's the balance that you all have to think about, especially with those two franchises, around how do you bring in new folks who aren't necessarily as attuned to the kind of minutia of what it takes to drive a car in those ways, in the ways they kind of, usually come across to be super professional in that way, but also balancing that when, you know, the folks who are super sim are like, these tires are wrong, or this part of the track isn't really exactly what I expected it to be. You know, how are you balancing those things out from a larger perspective and kind of getting the feedback from the community? I'll go to Robert with that question.
So I think for Dirt 5 particularly, we made a decision to go less for hardcore racing fans and make a more accessible, fun and kind of amplified game. And we feel like the Dirt franchise has, you know, it's done many different things. And, you know, the Dirt Rally team that made Dirt Rally 2 did a fantastic job. And, you know, if you're into rally and off-road racing, that's a great game that you should definitely play. But Dirt 5 didn't try to be that or do that same thing. We leave that to the Dirt Rally team. We wanted to make something that was easier to get into, that was pick up and play. You know, one of the reasons why we included split screen is because we feel like that's a feature where people can get together and have fun, and it's less about the kind of simulation and seriousness. At the same time as that, you know, all our physics underneath is about realism, and it's the kind of helpers that we put on top to help people hit more apexes or not slide out so crazily. To fit that, and, you know, adding features that allow players creativity that can appeal to more hardcore players, like the playground arena where you can build and create and do time trials, and then those time trial modes, people, you know, play and play again until they hit that perfect corner and the perfect time.
Lee, what are your thoughts about kind of balancing the fun factor with the realism parts of it?
Yeah, I'm sure as you can imagine, that's a real challenge with Formula One, because we've got an incredibly hardcore audience that we started with, obviously. And obviously we wanted to attract other areas of, you know, Formula One fans are all ages, and some of them are gamers, some of them aren't gamers, and some of them in recent years, because the exposure the games had, have obviously wanted to play it. And it's incredibly challenging because a Formula One car is so quick. So as Rob was saying, we've always taken the same approach of building it sim from the ground up and then layering on assists. And in 2020, you know, we started to take that even further. So we started to add in a casual mode where we changed the off-track surfaces, because players who run off can now just drive back on, you know, automatic reset to track. So you're straight back into the action. And we too added split screen as well, because we felt that by the time we'd added enough assists or enough areas to the game that would make it accessible to a broader range of people, that you could literally just sit with your mate and play it on the settee, which before, you know, if they weren't a racing gamer, they would struggle. So yeah, it's a case of, we do so much for the hardcore, you know, and that is something we maintain annually every year. You know, we always push those boundaries, but we're also looking at ways to make the game accessible. So your casual Formula One fan who might not be a gamer can still get a fix playing the game.
I'm actually really curious to hear that, because I think, you know, what does the hardcore audience look like from the Mario Kart perspective? I've always been kind of curious to know, like, is that a part of the segment of the audience where they're just like, I will only drive like 150 cc's and that's it. Like, I'm not going to do anything else, you know, past that. What's the conversation look like from a kind of hardcore perspective in the Mario Kart world?
You know, I think we finally answered that actually with our other game, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe.
Yeah.
Because that was the one where we actually bridged up to 200 cc's. And, you know, prior to that, if you guys have all played Mario Kart series, but the way I've always played is at 150 cc's always. And I never break. You know, my philosophy was, you better be able to drift around the entire course or else you're just doing it wrong somehow. You know, but with 200 cc's, it all of a sudden introduced the fact that you literally could not play some of those courses optimally without breaking. And it actually became a little bit more like a realistic racer, you know, like an F1, where it's like, no, you can't just stay on the gas the entire time. Like, you actually have to be, you know, measured in the way that you're approaching these courses. And so that finally changed it. And I think it, for that hardcore audience, you know, the really core upper end Mario Kart fans, it was a moment for them realizing that they might have to change their techniques.
Literally, you're going too fast for your own good, kind of.
Yeah, general, huh? Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. I'm also kind of curious about, you know, you mixing up realities with the game that you're making. You know, how did you kind of tackle the challenge of building those tracks and systems for a living room. You know, we have that late night, oh, I stepped on a Lego, ow, moment. But you know, you're kind of thinking about that in terms of, you know, giving, you know, physical space for a physical game that also has, you know, virtual components to it. What was some of the kind of, you know, this has never been done before solutions that you kind of had to come up with?
Well, that was, you know, all the credit to that goes to the Cart and Gate development teams. You know, this of course was a partnership with Velen Studios and Nintendo, and you know, that right there is the whole game. You know, there's people's environments are not something that could be controlled. Of course, that was going to be an X factor no matter what. What could be controlled is the building blocks that you give them in order to make their tracks. That of course, you know, took a lot of research when it came to how the cart's camera is going to see the how it's going to see the gates and know to go through them. And for me, really, the aha moment was the first time I saw how that was going to work. Where, you know, before you play, you would actually drive your, you know, you'd set up the gates, drive through them in a circuit that you wanted, and then that laid the track for the rest of the time. And now all of a sudden, you will actually see that track when you're actually playing through it. You know, that I think leap was really what made the formation of the rest of the game possible. And of course, it you know, took a lot of technical work. And again, just all the credit to the Cart and Gate development team for marrying really the hardware and the software in a way that you know, created a totally unique experience.
Yeah.
Do you think obviously we all shipped games during lockdown, but do you think in some ways that Mario Kart Live was helped by people being in their living rooms where it was actually people were going to play it and testing in real life circumstances to close it out?
That's really funny that you mentioned that. You know, I don't know the answer to your question. I think it's probably sort of six of one, half dozen of the other, that it probably provided a bit more inspiration than usual because people are sitting there staring at the same environment like, oh, you know, like, you know, maybe I could do something here. I was coming from the other angle where it was like, you know, the beauty of the game is that you could turn this very mundane environment that maybe you were a little bit sick of into something that was fantastical and was fun to experience again. So I don't know if it was necessarily, you know, conducive to the development process, because who knows really, but I think it for me personally, it definitely ended up being something that was a welcome escape from, you know, my cage. The cage looks a lot different from the floor level.
You're like, oh, that my dog, that's a great obstacle to drive around.
I really need the vacuum under there.
You're right. And then brings up so many different things of just like house management of just like, all right, oh man, I gotta make sure my apartment is okay. I'm kind of curious from the, you know, dirt and F1 perspective, because you're working kind of and probably pretty closely to, you know, the organizations and the actual like technology that drives those particular kinds of cars fairly well. Have you seen anything that has come from the real world that is, you know, maybe thrown, you know, a bigger challenge when it comes to kind of replicating what that thing is in the kind of digital versions of the games that you've been making? Lee, I'm kind of curious about that from your end. I know that there are advancements happening all the time, not only from a safety perspective, but from a car perspective. Are you seeing a lot of changes happen that make you have to think faster on the fly about how you would need to incorporate that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, thankfully, we've got a really great relationship with the team at Formula One, so we get a nice early head for most things. But there have been occasions where, you know, they'll want to try something a little bit different. A few years ago, they decided to try a different qualifying format. And obviously we hadn't got that implemented in game, and that was quite a significant amount of work, but it didn't stick. It only was used for a couple of race weekends and then it was dropped. And obviously the last 12 months has been very tricky because, you know, tracks are one of the most time consuming things for us to create. And there's been a number of tracks, you know, added to the calendar. But in terms of sort of the tech for the cars, we work really closely with our team, and we can even try things out in our game on behalf of Formula One. So, you know, we do get a pretty good early heads up on the tech changes. And obviously the rules are published very early so that the teams can develop their cars as well. So when we start developing the physics tech we need, and the sort of things we'll need to build those cars for that generation. For example, you know, the next rule change changes the cars to have more underbody aero than overbody to clean up the racing so it's a bit closer so they can follow easier. Obviously, we've been focusing on changing some of our physics tech to accommodate underbody aero more effectively. So it's an ever-changing world, and it is exciting. And thankfully, we do get a good heads up on most of these things. But there's obviously this period in time, there's a lot of things that impact that is completely out of everybody's control.
Yeah. Robert, what about you? Any advancements within the space that have kind of made you all have to rethink or redo some of the work you kind of had planned for the games?
Not necessarily advancements, but recreations of like real world events we've had to take creative license to. We have these events in Dev 5 called Pathfinders, where you get these rock bouncer vehicles that are meant to be climbing up like really steep mountains.
Huh.
And when we were first implementing that, we tried to do it relatively realistic. But if you go and watch some YouTube videos on them, you'll notice like they crawl quite slowly, they get stuck, and they need to like wiggle out and, you know, apply some torque to one wheel or, you know, change some of the gearing. And we found it just wasn't fun. And then you'd move your wheel a bit and sometimes you'd get past it and sometimes you wouldn't and you couldn't figure out why. So we had to try and come up with creative solutions to try and, you know, incorporate that kind of game mode into Dirt 5 whilst making it not frustrating, but fun and accessible.
Did you find that when you kind of wind up going through that feedback of saying, hey, this isn't actually fun, this is not really hitting what we wanted it to do, and then getting to a place where you found a good, happy medium for that, did the audience kind of still, you know, come to it in a good place? Because, you know, sometimes it's just like, no, this isn't exactly what it was supposed to be because it doesn't reflect what's happening in real life, but we'll give you the benefit of the doubt because you put it in and it wanted to be implemented.
Yeah, so I think we were quite lucky because we're not an official sport like Formula One. We're allowed to take a little bit more license. And I think when players got their hands on it, they quite enjoyed it. You know, one of the interesting things about, and it's probably true of Mario Kart and, you know, Formula One, is not everybody on the team is happy with everything. There's some people who the rock bouncers are their least favorite things. And they're like, we don't understand why they're including them. And, you know, users out there, we've got loads of them who love them and want to see more of that type of content. So making sure we have that variety to kind of please as many people as possible is, you know, great.
Yeah, I'm sure that is a extremely difficult thing to figure out of how do you make sure most folks are happy when it comes to that part of the equation and making sure that part of the game is always kind of hitting in that good space. I'm really curious really quickly before we pivot to giving away a lovely dice award. You know, from a technological standpoint, we've gotten to a really fantastic space where, you know, especially for games that are kind of, you know, going through a more realistic lens, you have way more polygons and way more things that you can work with than ever before. Has that felt kind of more daunting to know that you have less room for imperfection than you see with other kinds of games? Or does that feel like a challenge to be able to say, like, we will nail this when it winds up being in our game? We will make sure that we have a game where things look as beautiful as possible and we'll mimic that real version, a real life version of it. Liam, I'm curious to hear your thoughts about that.
Yeah, so I'm kind of in the enviable position that I can just sit back and just judge whether I think something looks good or bad, because I'm not an art guy. I'm not the, you know, I'm not one of the tech guys. So obviously the pressure's on those guys because they know what's available to them. They know what they can achieve with that tech. So they'll set the goals really, really high. And then obviously we'll review the work and we'll say, so that looks absolutely mind blowing. You know, the image quality is better. You know, the lighting's better. We've got amazing time of day in the game. You know, all those things just get improved and better and better. So I literally just want it to look as good as physically possible. So, you know, I come up with the feature set with my guys, and then obviously the tech guys will come up with what they can do visually, what they can do with the audio, what they can do with the inputs as well. Obviously, we've got great new stuff with the PS5 controllers coming up, and obviously we support a lot of peripherals as well with wheels. So, yeah, so tech's a big thing, especially in a game like Formula One, when you consider, you know, we've we've always strived to run 60 frames per second on the outgoing generation of consoles. So, you know, it's always been tech's a big thing for a Formula One game for sure.
Yeah. I was curious about that because I know now that I've almost gotten a good spot for a racing wheel, now I'm like, huh, I understand now why everyone is so excited about the process of doing it in those ways. It is time. I'm very excited that I get a chance to now share who has won our DICE Racing Game of the Year award. I think, again, thank you, gents, all for being here and for being amazingly good sports. Our winner for the DICE Racing Game of the Year is Mario Kart Live. How are you doing? Thank you so much.
Oh, man.
Congratulations.
Love it.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome.
Congratulations.
Very, very thank cool. you.
Congrats.
Thank
congrats,
you very
Nate.
Much.
Congrats, Nate.
Well, thank you.
And give the folks at home a little
you
bit
guys
of
as well to the other nominees.
Absolutely. Everyone in here has done a fantastic job with the games they have made for sure. Nate, you get a minute or two to kind of share some thoughts to the folks at home.
Of course, very, very different games. Mario Kart Live is a strange category of its own. But I do want to call out both the development team at NCTL, and the team at Valence Studios, who just did an amazing job on this. The director, Dan Doptis, and then the producers, Mr. Tamori, Mr. Matsunaga, and Nicholas Rep. Complicated project. And I think, you know, we're just really happy to see people enjoying it, really happy to see the component that really is the most important part of this game, which is the user making courses in their homes. You know, we're just really happy to see people enjoying the game like that and creating playgrounds in their own places. So really, really, really thankful for this award and happy to see people having fun with the game.
I mean, I say this from the bottom of my heart. I love playing the games that you all have made. It is a fantastic escape, especially as a scaredy cat for speed. I am the one who was like, we're going way too fast. How do I slow this game down? But it's brilliant that you all have made these wonderful games and we all get a chance to play them. So again, Robert, Lee, and Nate, thank you so much for your time today. And thank you so much for being here at the DICE Awards.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For Academy members and interested developers and publishers, submissions are now open for the 25th Annual DICE Awards, the premier peer-reviewed celebration of the best in interactive entertainment. Make sure to submit your 2021 game for consideration by Tuesday, December 7th at 5 p.m. PT. For more information, visit interactive.org.